This is Morgan Michael, welcoming you to Kindsight 101, the podcast, where you'll hear from world-renowned educational leaders about the mobilizing power of kindness, together by challenging our assumptions and venturing beyond the status quo in education. We can make a big impact, one small act at a time. I'm so excited to share Gail Markin's new book, Beyond Self-Care. We have a wonderful conversation where we discuss a lot of the concepts of self-care through the lens of leadership, how to support our staffs, what are some of the things that we can do to foster an environment of inclusion and psychological safety within the workplace. It's really a nice little taster of the book, and I recommend that everyone take a look at getting it because it is truly remarkable. Gail Markin is a counselor and a teacher who has worked to support the health and well-being in her local school district in Langley, BC, as well as across the province of BC. After becoming a teacher, Gail worked as a school counselor in many schools before moving to her district support role. As an educational consultant promoting staff well-being, she connects regularly with educators, leaders, and a lot of different people involved in education throughout the province and across North America. She is the chair of Social Emotional Learning, BC, and a member of the steering committee of the BC School Centered Mental Health Coalition. She participates in two amazing communities of practice that help shape her work, the K-12 Staff Wellbeing Network and the Compassionate Systems Leadership Network. It is through these supportive and connected networks that Gail has developed her passion for spreading her message about the importance of well-being, which she does through writing, teaching, and speaking. Gail has two bachelor degrees, two master's degrees in psychology and education. She is working on a doctorate in leadership and policy at the University of British Columbia. To learn more about Gail's work, visit gailmarkin.ca or follow at @markingail on Twitter. Welcome, Gail Markin, to Kindsight 101. I'm so excited that you were able to make the time to join me today. I'm so excited about your book. And perhaps you can just start by introducing your book briefly and maybe what made you write it.
Ah, such a good question. Well, I'll have to start with the fact that I'm so happy to be here with you, Morgan, and to be able to talk about it. I'm also really excited to start spreading this message. And I think the message really, the book's called Beyond Self-Care and Leading a Systemic Approach to Well-Being for Educators. And I think that's why I wrote it, is I really want to get the message out to people about the three different parts of well-being that, you know, it's an individual thing that we have to pay attention to our own well-being. It's a collective responsibility where we have to support and be, you know, with each other and lift each other up and all those beautiful things. And it's also something that the system is involved in as well. So, and we have to have all three parts going together. And I just felt like that was a message that people wanted to hear and needed to hear. And I guess the other reason is that I'm this a little bit of a sort of research geek, and I think you can probably relate to that, right? Once you read the research on all of this stuff, you can't not talk about it. It's just the impact, if you do it well, is so huge. And the impact if you don't do what are essentially fairly simple practices in the end, is also huge. So yeah, how could you not start talking about that?
I love that. And yes, I do share that passion for research for sure. And I think you're right. Once you sort of, you can't unknow this stuff. It's exciting to be able to share it and come alongside. Well, and I love that approach. I think that's the most effective approach when it comes to working specifically with educators, but really with anybody. With a lot of the self-care work is to come alongside us as a practitioner ourselves, right? And so I love that. Can you dig a little bit more into the idea of well-being connected to the self, to the other, but then also to the systems? I think sometimes it makes sense. The self part makes sense to people and is sort of that almost like that common sense, like, of course it's about yourself, but the other and the system, people might not really understand how those are connected or connect that to the well-being piece. Can you elaborate on that a little bit more?
Yeah, so and I think you're right. People do think of that self part. But the other part about the self, when we focus on self, is it also frustrates people. So, it's not just about, that's where that's kind of our go-to and we just do that automatically. It is that. Certainly, absolutely, we're all responsible for taking care of ourselves. We have to be. On the other hand, if we focus there, it's not enough. So I always use this sort of example of someone who, may be doing the most beautiful self-care practices, right? And they pay attention to their exercise and their sleep and their nutrition, all those things that we often can let go. I mean, they're not easy to keep doing, but maybe let's just pretend this fictional character, person is doing all those things beautifully. It's not enough if they come into a workplace where people aren't connected with each other, they're not supporting each other, or for some reason the system is getting in the way. There's something there that is impacting their own well-being as part of the larger system. And they're simple, usually simple practices or simple sort of structures, the way we do things that maybe getting in the way of someone's well-being and someone doesn't even realize it, right? So yeah, I think that's why they have to all work together. You need absolutely all three of them. So
I love that. And I think the system piece, particularly for educators, I think is frustrating, right? So there are elements that are beyond our control, and that can be something that can be tremendously frustrating. But I think this book is so helpful for those who are making decisions on a policy level or are leaders in our schools. There are different ways that we can approach sort of making space, creating space, holding space for those with whom we work, our colleagues, but also our the people who work within the context of the school that we might be leaders within, that context as well, where we can actually have an impact as the leader. I think there was some study or some research I read that said that proportionally leaders tend to their word, what they say, proportionally have much more weight than everyone else. And so when a leader is able to set that tone, that can make a really big impact on the general culture, right? So what would you say is sort of the responsibility or maybe an invitation for a leader who wants to foster a climate and a culture of self-care practice and psychological well-being? Like, how do we do that in a school setting or an educational setting?
Oh, such a big question, but I
It
love it.
is maybe like a little bit.
Well, the first thing is you have to start with yourself, right? That you as a leader have to go through those same three steps. I don't want to call them steps because you don't have to do one, the next, and the next, but you absolutely have to begin with yourself. And not only because you're modeling that, although that's important, but it gives others the permission, sort of like a unwritten permission to do the same. But probably even more important is that whole contagion effect, right? That contagion effect of when you're doing well or you can create calm even for a moment in your crazy busy day, but also that stress contagion that we have to be really cognizant of as well. And I know the research about leaders that you reference, and it is really important. Like, we really care what our leaders think, right? Like, they do matter, but they also need to know that they're one person within a system. It also is sort of that delicate balance between, yes, absolutely, you have a huge impact on the people that you lead and you work with, just like we all do. But tossing out that idea of heroic leadership as well, right? That it's up to the leader to take care of it all and to fix things for everyone, because that's one of the other things that makes us well, is that ability for us to contribute and for us to do things. And so, yeah, I've seen so many leaders who want to, for really good reasons, sort of wrap around and take care of people.
And then that's
Yeah.
problematic.
Yeah. And yes, we want to help and take care of, but if that's not working, we need to know that it's not working.
Someone might say, oh, well, I'm taking care of my staff and I feel like it's positive. Like, what are some ways, maybe some examples that you know, that aren't as effective? Like it seems like it's effective initially, and then is it sort of a crutch, or what do you think?
So, yeah, I'm just sort of thinking something as simple as a leader planning a lovely social event in their school, for instance. And they don't want to ask already busy people. They know everybody's busy, and so they kind of take care of it. And it could be a social event, but it could be something else, like a, you know, conducting some kind of survey or, you know, doing something. And they just take care of it because they don't want to ask people. They don't want to overload people. They're trying to take care. So they go out and they buy little gifts and they spend a lot of time and they do this lovely social event. And then it maybe it goes over well, maybe it doesn't. What if other people really wanted to also be able to take care? Because we like to do that stuff, right? And so feedback, like if we're really open to feedback and people can come and say, hey, that was really great. And I love that you care about me. But I also would really love to be able to be involved in that next time.
The intention is like filled with love and wanting to care for people. But I think sometimes you're right. Like I think there's ways that people want to exercise their autonomy or they want to express themselves, and it's like a creative practice and it's part of their well-being too. And so speaking of feedback, so you talked about it's almost like an exit practice for preparing for summer break or even over the winter break, that a leader could ask some specific questions. I have them here, but I'd love for you to speak to them. Sort of eliciting some honest feedback in terms of what their leadership is like and how effective it is from the perspective of those with whom they work. The first one is asking, what am I doing that I need to keep doing? And then what am I doing that I need to stop doing? And then what am I not doing that I need to start doing? I read that and I was like, yes. Can you, yeah, can you elaborate on that and speak to that?
So yeah, I took those from a supervisor that I had actually fairly recently, who I just love and is amazing. And she would ask those questions to the staff that she worked with every year. And she's, you know, readily said that sometimes she got some feedback that was hard to hear, but
I
it was
bet.
always valuable. And not only did she ask these questions that I thought were so powerful, but then came back when we all arrived in the fall, having had a chance to think about them and, you know, make some more changes or input some things, and then talked about it. You know, these are some of the things I'm going to try based on this feedback. And it's powerful. She did it with students as well in the with a different sort of feedback type form to sort of say, and always do the feedback afterwards. Again, this is what I heard and this is what I want to do. And we should all be doing that. We should do it in our classrooms and in our schools. And like we should all be asking for feedback. And I think feedback is one of the biggest, most powerful tools that we need to sort of harness. You just think about that in the like even in the sense of meetings, right? Like we want to create meetings of whomever is in the meeting, you know, the whole group, to be able to give feedback on what we're doing and to make it a place where people not only are they okay to do it, they're kind of expected to do it, right? That's just what we do here, you know. So that we get really used to that sort of process and can be growing and learning and getting better all the time.
Which I think is so powerful. And I think maybe what would you say is kind of the thing that's holding a lot of us back from doing that re regularly? Whether it's, I look at it, you know, I teach kindergarten and I think, wow, these would be some pretty powerful questions to ask parents. I think it'd be pretty powerful to ask my students that, my colleagues. But there's like that reticence, you know, to really dive in. Are there some things that you think hold us back from wanting to do that?
Yeah, for sure. I think one is just we're not in practice of doing it. Second of all, we're in a system, and here we go back to sort of the systems kind of way that used to always be. And I really think we're beyond that in the classroom and things like that, where it used to be a very top-down kind of model. That's just the way it was. It was hierarchical, traditional kind of system. And it was just the, the sage on the stage or whatever it is, right? That would
Yeah.
impart knowledge. And, we're not in that space anymore. And we know that, yeah, I think it's just that practice. So that's one. The second one is sometimes feedback is like we never learned how to give it well necessarily, or receive it well. And I think sometimes when there's feedback that's hard, we just rather kind of not have that.
Yeah.
So we just have to learn and practice it, right? That
Yes.
moment of it's okay. And it's
Yes.
okay to say that too, right? Sort of
Yeah.
normalizing the fact that we can say, oh, wow, that was really hard to hear, but I'm so glad you said it. Even if I need a minute to process it, you know what? I actually need some time to think about it. Can we talk about it in an hour? Can we talk about it tomorrow? It's totally okay. We're just not used to doing that, right? And I think we have to really normalize that feelings are in the room. One, they're there. And sometimes they feel uncomfortable, like, and we're not going to fix that. We're not going to be able to not have uncomfortable, but they're really worth it to talk about it because we all improve together.
Yeah, I think that is so beautiful. And I think the fear often holds us back. I think I find myself in that position sometimes where I'm like, oof, it's hard to hear. It's hard to hear the truth sometimes, it's hard to hear that. And I love allowing yourself and allowing others the space to process and understanding that that's part of it. And our initial reaction is going to be that wash of feelings that come up. There's a quote, I'm probably going to totally butcher it, but along the lines of, our first reaction isn't really our responsibility. That's just what is, our emotional reaction. Our second reaction and then our subsequent actions are our responsibility. So creating that space, allowing ourselves, like you said, the practice of digging in, using new language, using new systems to create a basically room for growth. And I think that's at the crux of what we should be valuing in schools is that opportunity for true growth. And I don't know if we always see it because of the fear, I think. This wasn't particularly necessarily in your book, but what would you say when it comes to that sort of fearful feeling around those big, vulnerable conversations? Is there any advice that you would give to people as they head into them or something to keep in mind?
Yeah, I think again it goes back to that that bit around doing your own kind of work, that practice of self-awareness. I do lots of work with adults now and around staff well-being. And one of the things I ask in almost every time that I meet with groups of adults is, where do you feel feelings in your body? And we do this work in the classroom all the time. These little kids can say exactly where their feelings are in their body and all of those things. But I'm continuously surprised how often adults don't know where their own, where they hold their feelings in their body. So, and how helpful it is. And I just love it because people are like, oh yeah, and they pay attention to that. And it's so helpful to know, oh, this is, and I do this. You guys can't see me, but I'm doing this thing holding my chest here because when I feel any kind of emotion, I get this sort of tightness in my chest, and it gives me that moment because I know that that's a something for me, right? That's where my feeling's starting. It gives me that moment to say, oh, something's going on for me. I don't have to do any more than that in that moment, depending where I am and what's going on, except notice it. I don't know. I think so. It starts with that. Now to get back to your question, it starts with that practice of self-awareness and, giving ourselves the grace to know that it takes practice. And then just creating spaces where it's okay to do that. So I can be as brave as I want. There's been lots of conversation about safe spaces and brave spaces. And I like to use the term safer in a way because I acknowledge that they're not the same for absolutely everyone. But it's that creating a place where we're always working towards making it more safe to be able to speak up And then it's that ability to take that brave step, right? To just do it. And, also then if you get it wrong or to come back. So I love that thing, that sort of circle back option in meetings and gatherings of people that sort of says, hey, this happened and, on it went. And now I'm realizing that it's bothering me. Can we go back? And so creating those sort of, I don't want to say rules, but just ways of being in space together.
Like understandings almost that this is how we do it. Like it's sort of just, it's almost like protocols. Like in this place, it sounds a bit clinical, but it is sort of like this is how we do things. And I think it's helpful to have protocols. It's helpful to have systems that are effective. And I think if you don't define them on some level or there's not some sort of understood culture, then it kind of evolves on its own and not always in a adaptive and healthy way. So there's that, right?
And I think that you have a really good point there, is that it's important to make it explicit, right? Like in this space, we give feedback, we share the space, we work together and we make sure that everybody is responsible for the outcome together.
And sometimes it's uncomfortable, and that is also an expected part of the journey, which I think is healthy too, to sort of say that. I love, there is a piece, just speaking of self-awareness, where you talked about, and I think this is applicable not only in education. I think a lot of this work really applies to all facets of our lives. And honestly, my belief is that if we are healthy, happy adults, in all of those different areas, or maybe not always. I mean, we're not always able to nail it in all areas, but that it's not just about our jobs, it's about the way that we take care of ourselves and we interact with others and, our general, the way we hold ourselves in the general community, right? But you talk about, when things are tricky, and there are those underlying feelings, that there are three action options for us. And I thought this was really cool. The lean in, the letting it go, or the solving of a problem. Can you speak to that a little bit?
I think the lean in one is, of course, lovely. That's the one where you're enjoying this, right? And so I think feelings and experiences of, that kind of feeling of happiness and those good feelings, they're always fleeting. They're not constant, right? They go up and down all the time. So if you're on one of them, like lean into it, hold on as much as you can. And then the other beautiful thing is you can go back to it, right? So you can get that same sort of good feeling just by visualizing something. So if you've taken that moment to sort of code it, you can also use it later if you need it. So I love that one. The other one is let it go. Like I used that example earlier when my tightness in my chest, right? It might be something that's irritated me because someone said something or something's happened, or but I can actually make a choice to just go, this one isn't really worth me digging into a whole lot, but I'm not going to take it on, right? So I can choose to let it go, and that might be just as simple as that little bit of self-talk that says, oh, I'm just going to let that one go. Or it might be that taking a breath, or it might be, well, I think I'll just go for a walk around the block if that's available to me. Like whatever it is that I need to do to sort of say that one's done. I'm done with that one. And like I say, it could be just take a second, or it could take longer. And then the third one is, and this one can happen right away, where I go, oh, actually, this one's important. I need to sort this out with someone, like the feedback, or the, let's circle back to something, or one of those things. And I know that in the moment, and I go, okay, actually, this is one we should sort out. Still don't have to hugely hook into it, but I've decided that's a problem solve one. Or the other thing that happens is I've decided to let it go. So I've done option number two, but then I notice it's not working. Right? It still continues to bug me. And then it's time to sort of say, well, I tried option two, I tried to let it go, but actually it's still bothering me. And I'm not actually letting it go. So let's do some problem solving around that one so that we can move on.
I love that. I think it's a terrific framework. Just being cognizant of time. I think I could talk to you for 3 hours or longer, actually all day about this. So it's a beautiful book. I Loved reading it. I was so hooked into so many of the concepts that you explored. And honestly, I feel like we just got to scratch the surface. What would you like readers or educators to know right now as it pertains to your book? If you could sort of share
Oh.
one, I know this is a tricky one, one
No,
message.
it's such a beautiful question, actually. I think to me the really important parts is the three essential parts that they all have to be working together. If that's the one message people take away, that would be beautiful. And then I just want to say that this is a book that I wrote, but I wrote it from a whole bunch of different people's research and wisdom, and really just compiled it into this. And the reason was really to spread the message. So that's the other thing I'd want people to know is just talk about this stuff, start the conversations in your schools, in your workplaces, because we're all not struggling with it. We're enjoying well-being, and sometimes we're struggling with it, and sometimes we're like, but we're all in it. And so yeah, start the conversations. Let's talk about impacting systems and making things easier and better.
Beautiful. I think that's amazing. And I think that's where it starts, right? Is speaking about it and with intention and allowing that to be something that we value as a staff, right? I think that's huge. Gail, where can people find you if they want to engage with your work, or they want to ask you questions, or they want to book you for speaking engagement?
Yeah, so it's all, you can see it in the book, but I also have a web page, gailmarkin.ca, so they can find me there. And yeah, there's yeah, I would love to connect with people. I'm on Twitter, at least at the moment, and have a beautiful community there of lots of great people. So you can also find me there at Mark and Gail, I think is my handle.
Perfect. Perfect. I'll put it in the show notes too. Listen, I'm so grateful for your time and for this beautiful book. And yes, it's sort of drawing from so many other people's work, but at the end of the day, you're the one who did it, and you did it in your voice. And I think that that's a gift. Sometimes it takes the right voice to connect with the right ear. And so I think that it's a gift to the world, and I'm really appreciative that you were able to bring this book to life. And it's a really important message. So thank you so much, Gail, for joining me today.
And I will say thank you so much back.
I want to thank you for the wonderful reviews that you've left for this podcast on iTunes. Your reviews make a big difference in helping other educators find this show. If you think that I'm doing good work here and you'd like others to get inspired and join our 21-day kindness challenge and movement, I'd love it if you would take a minute, head over to iTunes, and leave a review. Thank you so much. This has been another episode of Kindsight 101, the podcast. For links to resources mentioned in this episode, visit smallactbigimpact.com and click on our podcast and choose this episode number. Now, I'd love to give my audience a heads up about my new book, which will provide ideas, actionable strategies, and inquiry-based approaches to creating kinder classroom through serving the community. Subscribe to my blog for more information. Now, I would love to hear from you. What's the biggest insight that you gain from this conversation? Head over to our website, smallactbigimpact.com, leave a comment on our podcast page, or tag and connect with us on social media with the hashtag #SmallActBigImpact to share your inspiring story of kindness. Can't wait to hear from you.